I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. One of L.L. McKinney's most powerful pieces of writing inspiration came in the form of a new niece. Having grown up as a black girl who loved sci-fi and fantasy books, McKinney didn't want her niece growing up without sci-fi heroes who looked like her. So she set about creating them. Today we sit down again with a Kansas writer to find out about the next chapter in her life. She has a new book out, the latest installment in her Wonderland series, that takes readers between worlds and puts a black Alice front and center. McKinney also made the jump to writing full-time, so tell us what it felt like to make that leap. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. L. McKinney is having her breakout moment. Critics are praising the Kansas City resident's first two books, the last of which is A Dream So Dark. Lionsgate Television has optioned the TV rights to her first book, A Blade So Black, which was an urban fantasy retelling of Alice in Wonderland. And McKinney is living her dream of telling stories featuring black girls who have so long been overlooked. She says she's long ached for stories that show that black girls are treasured like everybody else. Somehow, she once said, for some reason, we were always left behind. Maybe that's changing. L. McKinney was last here almost a year ago, and she's back because so much is going on. L., welcome back. So good to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be back.
You know, you said not long ago that you thank God for every messy, magnificent second of your life these days, saying that old phrase, if a dream comes true, doesn't do your life justice right now. Tell us what you're feeling, because you're on a roll.
I am, not to toot my own horn. I'm, like you said, I'm feeling incredibly blessed and so thankful that, you know, the 10 years that I've been pursuing this for publication has come to fruition. But little Elle is also thrilled because she loved to tell stories, and now she gets to.
It took you 10 years to get that first book out?
Yes, it did.
Why so long?
Well, a lot of it was as just normal when it comes to writing, where you write it and then you rewrite it and you get feedback. But there were some moments where, you know, you would hear feedback like we have our only black girl book for the year. And for whatever reason, we were only allowed one. It didn't matter the genre. The same was said for people from Latinx backgrounds, from East Asian and South Asian backgrounds. That was, you know, acceptable to a degree up until maybe about 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been struggles that have definitely been because people didn't connect with the character because of her cultural background.
Huh. Well, just for the record, this show and this radio station appear to me to be your good luck charms here, Elle. Your first book, A Blade So Black, hit bookstores the day after you were on the show last year. Your latest book will be published, what, next week? Do I
yes.
have that right? So just so you know, you need us, too.
I mean, I'll gladly come back every year. We could keep that going.
Because good things happen every time you show up here.
Exactly.
Yeah. How quickly did you turn your new book, A Dream So Dark? Because you must have written it pretty fast.
Yeah. So from blank page to complete, I started working on this in July of last year. So it took about 7 months to get it to a point where they were sending out the advanced reader copies. And then it was another couple months before it was ready, because it has to go off to, you know, be measured and all that stuff for covers. And so it was 6 months from blank page to shelf ready.
So your first book was a 10-year process. Your second book, 7 months. Do I hear that right?
Well, the first book itself was only about 4 or 5 years of that process.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it went from being years to being months.
And why the fast pace? Because the publisher wanted to capitalize on the success of the first book? Or,
well, in YA, it's specifically for series, the sort of unspoken rule is once a year. So I'm in the fall lineup. So it's like, okay, so book two will be the next fall. And then book three, because now there's going to be a book three, will be fall of 2020. No, yes, it is 2019. Yeah. So that's just sort of the expected sort of groundwork for young adult.
So it goes without saying then that writing your second book came a lot easier to you than the first one did?
It came easier. For one, I already knew the world. I knew the characters. I didn't have to take time to figure all of that
Everything
out.
Everything was developed in your mind. Yeah.
And it was, it was also a little bit harder because when I was writing the first book, my grandmother was still alive. And I dedicated the first book to her. She wasn't here, unfortunately, to see it. But I know she's smiling down, proud of me. And in the second book, we meet Alice's grandmother. So writing the scenes between her and her grandma was especially hard. So it was easier as far as time and getting the word count down. But emotionally, it was a little bit harder.
What's the toughest part of writing these fast-paced books that you put out? Because these books really move.
I would say the toughest part is not second-guessing myself, because I'll write myself into a corner, or at least I think I've written myself into a corner, and I might agonize it over for a few days. And then I'm in the shower or driving or doing something where I can't actually get to a pen and paper, and I'll figure something out, and it'll be like, oh, I set that up two chapters ago where I had skipped ahead because it was giving me trouble, because you can't just stop. So I put a note in, come back to this later, and I keep going. And I'll write something later on that reveals or unveils the problem that I was having earlier. So on a subconscious level, I kind of knew what I was doing. But that's one of the things that makes it a little bit easier.
So are you writing these things without an outline? Are you flying without a net here?
For the first one, yes. For the second one, yes, to a degree. The way that it works for me is I will maybe plot out three or four chapters and then write to catch up and then plot out three, four more. Once I have the entire story done and I can hold it in my head, then I go back and I shore up an outline and then we do the final to that outline. But
the first time through, you're flying solo, you're flying blind, and then you come back and outline then.
Yes.
That's an unusual process.
For me, my brain is sort of, if I know what's going to happen, like every step of the way, I'll get bored with it and won't want to be bothered. So, and plus it works because if I surprise myself, I know I'm going to surprise my readers.
You know, you're deep into fantasy in this latest book. There's The Black Knight and The Dreamwalker and Duma the Bandersnatch, which is a dog-like animal with hoof feet and a purple tongue, just so everyone's on the same page. There's the poet Maddie and the ongoing journey to Wonderland. What draws you to such a fantastic place?
I have always been somewhat fascinated with Wonderland because it's the only place where literally anything could happen and it doesn't need a reason. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could go in there and something will pop up where in other sorts of fantasy, you're going to need to explain it. I mean, I kind of still do need to explain it because it needs to make sense, right? But the fact that it's Wonderland means that my explanations can be as wild and unbridled as I want them to be.
And the wilder, the better in some cases.
Yes. Like a half dog, half deer creature, which is the Bandersnatch. So.
Yeah. Well, Elle McKinney is my guest. Her latest book, A Dream So Dark. We're going to continue our conversation with her in just a few minutes. We're back for segment two of our visit with Elle McKinney of Kansas City about her latest young adult fantasy novel, A Dream So Dark, which continues her use of Alice in Wonderland as a foundation for her story. This is her second novel. Lionsgate Television has optioned the TV rights to her first book, A Blade So Black. You know, I asked you, Elle, before the break about several of the characters in your new book, including Duma the Bandersnatch, which is this dog-like animal with hoof feet and a purple tongue. Where'd you come up with that in your life? Where does that come from?
Well, my family has always had dogs, right? And they're...
With purple tongues?
Well, not with purple tongues, per se. I mean, I think kid me would have thought that was cool. Adult me might have been a little concerned, like, what did you get into? Yeah. But we've always had dogs, and they have such personalities. And in Wonderland, you know, kids have pets, but I couldn't just let it be a normal dog, as amazing as dogs are. So I was like, well, what could go with a dog and my cat was currently, like, jumping at the National Geographic documentary I was watching. So I was like, gazelle, there we go. Like, things like that are what pop up, and Wonderland helps make that okay.
I'm guessing living in that world for you as a writer must be a blast, because you're really drawn to those worlds.
It's amazing. It allows my imagination to just run wild. I'm able to just jot down ideas, and I'm like, I can come back to that later with an explanation, and somehow make it work. It doesn't matter what it is or just how out there it might seem. Every time, Wonderland is a place I can ground it. And it's great to be welcomed there as a creator.
Do you have friends now who are saying, hey, Elle, think about this?
Yes.
They throw you ideas all the time?
I get ideas for characters, ideas for creatures, ideas for stuff to happen in the book. And I'm like, okay, I'll take it down and it might make it in there. Like, there's a woman from my church who one of the characters is based on, because her personality is just so vibrant. And I was like, I have to, you have to, okay, yeah, this
You're
is going to happen.
There.
Yeah.
Did you grow up reading fantasy?
I did. I grew up reading all kinds of fantasy and science fiction. And it was, I love it, still love it. Some of my favorite books. And like I've said before, I never really saw myself or anybody that looked like me. You know, we weren't in Middle Earth. We weren't in Narnia. We were barely on the Millennium Falcon. So being able to give that to my nieces and nephews and to other kids out there who are searching for themselves in these pages is amazing.
So as a kid, were you bothered by that? There were no Black people in the books you were reading?
I was bothered, but I didn't know how to articulate it. I didn't know exactly what was throwing me off.
You didn't really understand it was the absence of African American people that.
Correct. Yeah. I just knew that something about this just didn't feel right, because that wasn't the world that I lived in. And when I started like watching shows, gratefully, one of the shows that I watched early on was like Star Trek. So like Uhura was there. And that's when in my head it clicked. I was like, oh, okay, that's what's going on. All right. So it wasn't until like teenage years when those things started showing up online and you could watch them without having to like hunt through old DVDs or whatever, or I guess VHS tapes would be what it was.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So what kind of response do you get from young Black girls about the books you're doing?
I have gotten response, and I might get somewhat misty because it's very... It just does my heart so much good.
I was going to say, it's got to be so gratifying.
I've gotten so many responses. There was one girl who, when I announced the books back in 2017, I did so with this picture that a friend of mine had drawn, beautiful picture, Molly Owen. And she wrote The Merciful Crow, amazing story. You should grab that too. But she had drawn this picture of Alice, and this girl, she messaged me on Twitter, and she was like, this character has my nose and my hair, and I've never seen that before. I'm going to print this out if that's okay so I can keep it with me. Hmm. And I'll get things like that, or I'll go to schools and they'll want to take pictures because they've not seen an author that looks like them either. Mm-hmm. And so just hearing the stories, and they'll cry and then I cry and then it's just a mess, but it's a great mess. And it's one of the reasons I do this.
So when your covers come out and there are these Black girls on them, that's got to be a great moment for you, too.
It was so good because I got to go to the photo shoot to see. I didn't, because they did a lot of digitizing to put her in Wonderland. But to see her and to talk to her, and she once reached out to me as well, thanking me for the opportunity to be on a book like this, because she hadn't seen it either. And to see her, and now it's happening more and more often, you know, to be on these covers, to be empowered, and to have her natural hair, to have her dark skin. It's just, I don't have words. Words are what I do for a living, but things like this leave me without them.
How about adults reaching out to you and thanking you for what you're doing?
I've gotten that too. I had one mom who, she messaged me, her daughter is in Canada, both of them are in Canada, and I happened to go up there once, and so she drove hours to come see me at this bookstore, and her daughter could not speak because she was like shaking with excitement.
No kidding.
Yeah, so I just told her, it's okay, it's all right, I understand. So I got to give her a hug. Her mom was very grateful. I had a mom who has a son who's not a reader, and she said he also has difficulty reading because of some learning issues that he has. And this is the first book that he's read in a long time, and it's taking him a minute, but it's holding his attention long enough for him to get through it. And she thanked me for that. And again, I don't have words.
I can't help but wonder, why did it take so long to get to a point where books like yours are getting written?
I can't say specifically. I just know that there are a lot of traditions in place in entertainment that have kept people of color, Black people, out of the spotlight or on the margins for a long time. And it just translated over to that degree. Publishing has very often said that it follows the market and that the market wouldn't connect with stories like this. And we're seeing now that that's just not true.
It's just not true. And white kids are buying these books as well.
Absolutely,
as black kids,
they
right?
are.
Yeah, the kids,
absolutely.
Kids don't care.
They
yeah.
don't. That stuff is learned. It's taught, and they love it just as much as anybody else.
We'll be back in just a few minutes with more from young adult author L.L. McKinney. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. I'm visiting with author L. McKinney about her new young adult novel, A Dream So Dark, which will actually be out and available in bookstores on Tuesday, but available right now via KCUR with a good donation to this station. L, I wonder if you could read some from the beginning of this latest book. You know, Alice's mother has confronted her about missing school, and her clothes are a mess. Mom is just furious, and she's in Alice's face. What else should we know about this moment before you read that passage?
Well, this moment is, this book pretty much picks up where the last book left off. So mild spoilers if you haven't read the first one. But there was this huge battle, and she's grieving a loss. And at the same time, she can't tell her mom because she still has a job to do. So she's just, all this is broiling through her. It's bringing up memories of when her father died a year prior. So she's a little bit of a mess, both physically and emotionally.
And she has to keep it all inside, right?
She's trying.
She's bursting at the seams.
She's doing her best.
Let's read a little bit from this book, if you would.
The tears came anyway. They welled up and spilled over Alice's cheeks as she stared at the floor while fighting to keep from all-out sobbing. The carpet's shaggy white tufts went brown and green, the memory of the shredded football field dancing in and out of her vision. The rumbling snarl of fiends and the shriek of clashing weapons filled her ears. Her heart knocked against the inside of her chest, its thump-thump rising to join the crash. Voices surfed the waves of chaos. Sighed, on fire! It'll be okay. You'll be okay. Lies. You lied to him. She flinched. She hadn't meant to lie. She gave everything she had to try and save him. The Black Knight, he was the one that didn't keep his end of the bargain. He was the one that let those monsters tear her friend apart. Chess was gone because of him. Maybe, but Chess would be at home right now if you hadn't pulled him into this. Alice! Mom barked.
You know, I'm really struck by Mom as the character here. She's a single mom. She's trying desperately to keep things together in her household. What do you want us to know about her and families like hers, Al?
Alice's mom is very much afraid for her child because it covers in the last book that there was the shooting of an unarmed Black girl in their neighborhood. And that sort of thing just reverberates through the community. Everybody feels it. Everybody is affected by it, and it's no less for her. And you worry about your kids, especially if it's in your neighborhood. So Alice is dealing with, you know, her mom and this sort of helicopter parenting, but it's because of what's happened in her neighborhood. And it's also because her mom recently lost, you know, like the love of her life.
Yeah.
So she's grieving from that as well. And she sort of shut down emotionally. So she's overcompensating a little bit. And she's also, you know, trying to make sure Alice does good in school. She's going to work. She's doing what she feels she needs to be doing to protect her daughter.
You make a real point of giving us her viewpoint of the world. Why was that important to you?
It was important because I feel, well, for one, in YA, either the parents are dead or missing, usually, so that the kids can go off and get into shenanigans.
Right.
Meanwhile, Alice's mom is there and poses a complication to what Alice is trying to do. And I wanted to not only have this mom present, but also to fight against some of the stereotypes that we get about single Black moms in general. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's single not because of a deadbeat dad or anything, which is also a stereotype that I'm trying to fight against, but because this was a family unit and one of the parents is gone, you know, so it's, they're physically gone. He died. So it was fighting against that as well as just giving this viewpoint of what it's like to be trying to raise a Black child right now. So,
you know, I can't help but wonder about the pacing in a young adult novel. We got a little sense of it in that excerpt you just read, because I said, as I've said, this book really moves. Why is that so important?
I think it's important, for one, because you want to hold people's attention, right?
And that's harder these days,
it
right?
Really, especially with everything going on, like at YouTube, on tablets for three-year-olds, my niece and nephew, they're distracted all the time. But you want to hold the attention, for one, and you want to be able to tell a good story. And people are usually interested in what conflict is going on. So conflict is the driving force. It's not the overall proponent, but it helps keep people attached.
What's the special challenge for writing for teenagers? Are they harder to write for than, say, adults, do you think?
I think they're harder to write for because teens can sniff out the mess. They really can. If you're not authentic, if you don't mean what you say, if you're trying to pander to them, they will find you out in a heartbeat. So you have to come at them with respect, with understanding that, you know, they're figuring life out and it's just as hard for them as it is for any of us. They're living in this trash fire world as well, with things going on. And so it's just to be able to connect with them, and you have to be able to, like I said, respect them, understand them, and say, hey, I'm not here to try and teach you something. I just want to go on this adventure with you.
It's interesting you use the word respect. You hear that a lot when authors talk about young audiences. Why do you use that word?
Because adults, we have a habit of, like I said, pandering to youth. Like, they don't understand tough subjects, or they are not capable of grappling emotionally with stuff that's going on. Meanwhile, there are teens out there who are dealing with the exact same stuff that people will quote-unquote try to protect them from.
Yeah.
You know, so it does them a disservice.
Yeah. How cool is it to see, you know, your words? We're going to talk about the Lionsgate television thing in our final segment today, but your words being brought to life that way.
I am super excited about it.
I
bet. It's going to be I can't imagine what it's going to be like, but honestly, it's going to be amazing to know that my nieces and nephews will not only be able to read my words, but to potentially see that world brought to life.
Well, let's talk more about that when we come back for our final segment here. Again, L.L. McKinney is my guest. We'll talk about the Lionsgate television optioning the TV rights to her debut novel when we come back. And here we are. I'm Steve Kraske. My guest today again talks about black girl magic in her books, which we're about to explain. L. McKinney, thanks again for being here with us. What a pleasure to have you again.
This is so much fun. This is fun every time. I'm going to make a home here. That's just what's going to happen. You guys are going to have to deal with me.
Her latest book, A Dream So Dark, it actually hits bookstores on Tuesday. For our listeners who don't know, tell us about black girl magic and where did that phrase originate?
Well, the phrase, as I understand it, originated on social media. There was a woman who said that black girls are magical because through everything that has ever been thrown at us, we still manage to thrive and to do things like, you know, creating our own businesses and writing or creating art. You know, when sometimes it feels like the world is just dead set against you, being able to just exist as you are. So that's just one of the many ways of empowering black girls. And it's As Angie Thomas, who wrote The Hate U Give, says, Alice is black girl magic personified, and that was one of the best compliments anyone has ever paid, just to understand, you know, from someone who understands what that means.
Well, you've been empowered any number of ways since A Blade So Black, your debut novel, came out. I mentioned that Lionsgate Television has optioned the TV rights to that book. Where is that production right now? When are we going to see it?
I don't know.
And are you going to appear in it?
Well, I'll see if I can't squeeze my way into like a brief non-speaking cameo, just for the sake of my anxiety and my introversion. But I don't know where it's at. Because with that process, you just sort of sign everything over to them and you trust them, you know, to do good with the work. And there could be, they could be at any point right now in pre-production and I haven't been alerted to it. For one, I didn't ask to be included in like the day to day. That's what y'all do. Y'all are the experts.
Yeah.
Y'all don't need me for that.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I'm just excited that they believed in the book, and it was a long process. Like, they were interested. Like, we got the first email when that initial announcement went up back in 2017, because so many people were excited about it that they were like, we should maybe watch this. So we just sent them copies, and I mean, here we are.
Has it been cast yet?
No. Well, It might have been, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It hasn't been announced, at least.
Do you have any say over how this is going to roll out?
I don't have any say.
You signed that away, right?
Yes,
so they can change things.
They can change things. But I trust that they will be very, very true to the original, because there are some things that just won't transfer over to, you know, video.
Yeah.
But I'm not in control of casting, so don't ask me to put you in the movie, or movie, TV show, or movie, whatever happens. But I'm not in control of anything. I can consult. They can contact me for that. I'm always open.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I don't have any final decision-making power.
So we're a year or two away, it sounds like.
That is what my hope is.
Okay.
It could be at any, I mean, for all I know, I could get an email tomorrow and they're like, okay, we found a writer, we found a cast, we're going to make the announcement next week.
Right.
Or it could be a year from now when they're like, okay, we found everything. I don't, they don't keep me abreast of anything. All I do is send them the books as they come out and they do what they are there to do. They are the experts.
You know, you recently posted on Twitter that you quit your day job to write full time. Then you worried on Twitter that making that decision, and then you wrote, I have faith it'll work out however it's meant to work out for however long. This is what I've asked and prayed for years, and I'm incredibly blessed. So you're taking a step off the high dive here?
I am. I worked at Hallmark for a while. And I was writing the cards and other things that Hallmark words go on.
Right.
And today is actually going to be my last day. I have a half a day where I go in and get all my stuff and turn
this
in my badge and all that stuff. And then there was recently a lot of talk about, you know, finances and publishing, as sometimes happens. These conversations spring up. And a lot of people were like, don't quit your day job. Don't quit. I was like, oh, well, have I made a mistake? But no, I planned for it. I have everything, you know, set out. I have contingencies in place. And I've left Hallmark amicably. So if whatever happens down the line, if I decide I'm like, hey, I want to work with you guys again, then be cool. So It's all good.
I'm always curious about writers and how they do what they do. Like, when do you do your writing, and how do you get yourself into that place?
Well, I'll do it wherever I can. Honestly, I tried to tell myself that I'm going to be responsible. I'm going to wake up. And I'm going to get started immediately. And it's going to be 9 to 5, only for me to discover that I do my best writing starting at like 8 p.m. to like 3 a.m.
Oh, really?
So I'm a night owl when it comes to that. So. And you can't wait for inspiration to strike or the muse to be, you know, cooperative, because I have deadlines. So I do it where I can.
Do you have deadlines? Because people think of writers like you guys just do what you do. And when you get it done, you get it done.
I mean, maybe if you're Stephen King or J.K. Rowling, you can do that. But there are deadlines because I have to get the book to production, and then production has to do what they have to do so that it can hit shelves.
Right.
When they want it to hit shelves, which is, they're held accountable by the public as well, because like the book comes out on the 24th of this month, so that's Tuesday. The book had to be ready like sometime in July.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to turn it in sometime in like April so that they could do everything that
right.
they could do. So I am beholden to deadlines.
You know, going back to Twitter, one of your fellow authors posted, Ellen O. and L.L. McKinney have been on the receiving end of some vile harassment, including death threats recently. Is that true? I mean, what's behind that?
This happened earlier on in this year, and every now and then it'll happen, not necessarily to me, but it'll happen to other authors of color who speak up about something that's going on in the industry or just in general. And it happens to predominantly women of color that I've noticed who take a stand about something and say, no, this is wrong. It would be nice if people just didn't do the wrong thing. Nobody's ever like asking for any grand statements or anything. I wasn't pushing for anything. All I did was point out something in a book that I felt was perpetuated stereotypes and negative tropes.
Right.
That was it. And then somebody just took it and ran with it.
Hmm.
And as a result, all these variations of what happened just started pouring in, and the actual story got lost, and we took the run of that.
You know, Elle, you have a lot of fans here at KCUR. Congratulations on the second book, A Dream So Dark. We'll be looking for the Lionsgate television production, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun.